Okay, Hawaii Weekly Update with, what's your name?
With Scott.
With Scott Helm. So we came to somewhere nice. We should move aside actually, so I want to see the view. What you can't see on the other side is we're sitting in like the chapel grounds where people get married, which wasn't really my intention. But you know, it's a nice environment. So we're here for Lokomoko Sec in Hawaii. We're what, like a day and a half into it so far?
Yep.
I thought we'd do it together because we, first of all, I didn't actually write anything this week. And second of all, we did actually do some other cool stuff. But just because I know you got a lot of good views on this stuff, we just saw a talk, the first talk this morning. Do you want to talk a bit about that? Because I actually thought it was an epic talk.
Emily's talk, yeah. So it's probably my most anticipated talk of the conference. And it was essentially about how humans aren't very good with URLs, laying the groundwork for... you know, some experiments that Chrome was doing on how they can represent the really confusing URL bar differently.
So she's on the Chrome team as well.
Product manager for Chrome security. Maybe we should clarify that.
Yeah, like front. She's the person who really knows what they're doing.
And they have like the user research to back this up as well, right? So that's why I was really looking forward to this, because it's not just like people like URI making assertions. Emily's got the evidence to back these things up. So that was really interesting. And talking on the value of EV as well, which is a topic close to my heart. And it was really interesting to see the direction this is going. Deprecation of the scheme, that's a pretty new thing. That was interesting.
Yeah, so imagine a URL at the moment on a secure scheme where you've got, in Chrome at least, you've got padlock, secure text, HTTPS, also in green. And they didn't really put a time frame on it though, did she?
No, yeah, I didn't catch on.
So imagine the HTTPS scheme disappearing. And I tweeted her slide on that, and a few people got a little bit upset about it.
People on the internet got upset. No.
They got upset and they sort of said, you know, this is going to make phishing attacks and stuff easier. But one of the things that I took away from her talk is that people are terrible at interpreting URLs.
Totally.
And to think that you've got this entire massive URL and there's like one letter in the scheme that they're going to pay attention to, like it's just like they're seeing the visual indicators of the padlock and the secure text.
I like the general direction. HTTP bad, which is what they refer to it as now, they're removing, you know, they're moving towards like HTTP having this not secure thing. It was like passwords and credit card fields originally. In July, she said it's going to be all HTTP pages will have not secure in the address bar all the time. And the goal of that is to take the positive ones away from HTTPS long term, so that, you know, secure is the normal and you only get told when things are bad. And I quite like that approach.
I sort of took that away from a lot of the things she said. And I'd like to reiterate that again, getting to the point where the secure encrypted channels are the norm and any exceptions are starting to be overtly flagged. And she and I actually had a bit of to and fro a bit earlier on in the week along the lines of positive visual indicators being things that are kind of quasi-effective.
Yeah.
The absence of positive visual indicators causing people to change behavior just doesn't happen. This is the EV argument, right? Like if you don't see EV, you should change your behavior. And I asked people, even in my talk yesterday morning, a room with a lot of security pros, you know, like who thinks Facebook has EV? And a bunch of people are like, yeah, we think it has EV. And of course it doesn't. And then you say, well, would you change your behavior if you went to Facebook and didn't see EV? Well, no, you wouldn't. So I thought that was really cool. And yeah, like you said, she actually had user groups and like proper research and proper evidence.
Really helps kind of finalize those Twitter arguments of I think this and you think that. And it's like, well, this is what the evidence says. So we need that.
What will this mean to, I'm trying to put this delicately, what will it mean to some of the people who have been very vehemently against the move to HTTPS? Because there's going to be some people not real happy about this, right?
Yeah, well, there's going to be a few groups of people not very happy about this, but I mean, you know, if we move everything to HTTPS, nothing really changes, right? The fact that the internet wasn't HTTPS from the start was a bug and we're just bug fixing the internet. You know, we're not going to lose anything. What's going to not work? Do you know?
And let's be clear, when we say move everything to HTTPS, it's not deprecating support for HTTP, it's just more overt visual warnings on HTTP. So for the people who are going, you're going to kill the internet and get off my lawn, like this is not killing anything. It's just telling people that you're not on a particularly secure channel. And you know, then we can have the debate about how much those visual indicators, negative visual indicators, actually mean to people. But it's not making stuff go away, is it?
It's still just HTTP, just over TLS. You know, it's exactly the same protocol. Nothing is changing. Just the transport medium. Everything will work as it did. We've got to do it. You know.
right, so that's, yeah, that's good. I saw something earlier today which we've been discussing. This is like the most epic tweet thread I've seen in a long time. I'm still dealing with all the feedback from this. So someone has contacted T-Mobile in Austria and said, does T-Mobile Austria in fact store customers' passwords in clear text? And this was in response to, I think they learned that an operator could see the first X characters of the password. Mm-hmm. Now, this is just any other day on the internet, right? Like this sort of question. T-Mobile says, hi Claudia, the customer service agency, the first four characters of the password, we store the whole password because we need it for login. And like this kind of feels like the old thing if you don't actually understand why we have cryptographic hashes, right?
Yep.
Okay, so absolutely. Far business as usual. Claudia says, thanks for your reply, Andrea. Storing clear text passwords in a database is a naughty thing to do. She actually says naughty thing to do. Good on her for calling it as it is. Now, this is why it starts to go off the rails, because like, what's the one thing that a social media account should never do?
Talk about security.
Okay, talk about security. Well, all right, two things. Talk about security, and also be a dick to your customers.
That's just like, people should not do that, right? Like, people should not be dicks to other people.
The fact we have to call this out is what impresses me. So this is where T-Mobile goes off the rails. I really do not get why this is a problem. You have so many passwords for every app, for every mail account and so on. We secure all data very carefully, so there is nothing to fear.
Oh, that's problem solved.
You feel better now? And then someone else chimes in. Well, if your infrastructure gets breached and everyone's password is published in plain text to the whole world, and it says, what if? So, like, this is why we have cryptographic hashes. And T-Mobile's response is, what if this doesn't happen because our security is amazingly good?
Yes.
Well, what's your comeback for that?
Oh, there aren't words. I mean, like...
Well, Eric found words. Eric's words were... Bad news for you, nobody's security is that good. No, not even yours. It's not that I say you're 100% getting hacked. What if an employee accesses the database directly?
Insider threat.
Okay, insider threat. Reasonable response. And then T-Mobile says, well, I said amazingly good, not 100% secure. And I have to ask, are you an employee? Is this some kind of warning?
Way to hop on the back foot there.
I just feel like there's people here just going, here, have some more rope. Like, just keep going. Now, Eric makes a very reasonable response here, which is, are you nuts? If it's not 100% secure, make it as hard as you can for any kind of attacker to get to your passwords. I think, I don't think we can even go through the whole thread here, but we ended up seeing a lot of memes, followed by various XSS proof
concepts. The inevitable. Yeah.
And it's like every single time an organization starts going down the line of, like, we're hack-proof. And in their defense, they did say not 100%.
Yeah.
But they implied highly unlikely. And then, so I saw one XSS, and then you said you saw a couple of other things in tweets I haven't yet seen. So what
I mean, it's literally the don't touch the wet paint sign. Like, the first thing people are going to do right after that is touch the wet paint. So, yeah, two XSS pocs, someone found PHP RCE, so...
Like literally remote code execution.
Yeah, they were dropping the PHP info scripts. Yeah.
All right, and that's really just a proof of code execution. So from where it goes from there, who knows? I will link to the tweet thread in the notes for this video blog, whatever I call it now, because it is kind of epic. All right, so a few other things, and all of this is kind of mostly just general chatter. I passed my 100,000 followers this week.
Yes.
I know, we were there. We were drinking beers, like watching the numbers go up. And then you were encouraging people to unfollow me, which that didn't work so well. So.
You did go down, though, by like two at one point.
Oh, yeah, by two. But, it's been funny. Like, Twitter has actually been really, really awesome, and I know it is for you, too, as a broadcast channel. And not just like the broadcast stuff we're doing, but like a lot of the people that we've met here this week are people that we've engaged with.
Like literally right then, two guys behind us, it's like, hey, we've DM'd or tweeted, and I'm like, oh yeah, great to put a face to a name.
Exactly. So for all of the, every now and then someone says, it's not real life, it's online life, or I think maybe it's a little bit different for us because we travel a lot as well, but having the opportunity to meet people face to face is epic. So I appreciate everyone that has been following and didn't unfollow at Scott's prompting. That was greatly appreciated. Now, I didn't sort of prompt you on what I wanted to talk about today, because there's a couple of other things on here that we have discussed these a bit casually over the period of our Twitter engagements and here in Hawaii. One thing that that I sort of saw people losing their minds on a little bit this week was in relation to some comments I gave to the media. And I did an interview last week with a media outlet talking about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook. And like whichever way you cut it, that whole thing was an absolute debacle. It was, you know, it's definitely heaps of fault on Facebook's part. I guess we as security minded people sort of went, well, of course they're mining all of your data. And
it's easy to be really jaded to the shock and awe factor of this story, right?
It is, and it is a bit of a shock and awe factor. One of the comments I made to the press, because they're like, well, how do normal people protect themselves? And I sort of said, you know, look, go through, check your app permissions, you know, be conscious about whether you're publishing content to be publicly facing or not. And to be fair, a lot of that wouldn't have saved you from the data that Cambridge Analytica slurped up anyway. But one of the comments I made was, I said, look, I am personally really careful about deciding what I digitize. So I share a bunch of stuff on Facebook that's publicly facing, a bunch of stuff that's facing just friends like yourself. But, you know, you would see that I might post photos of my family in a setting like this. And I set the privacy so that friends will see it. But if I screw that up and everyone sees it, it's not disastrous.
Yeah.
So I'm not posting photos of the kids in the bath or something like that. And the point I made is, I said, look, I think you've got to be conscious about what you digitize, because when you digitize something, your risk level increases dramatically over a non-digital format. And I also made the point, I said, look, if you were, let's say you wanted to take intimate photos of yourself and your partner, be very careful about that, because if you digitize that, your level of risk goes up dramatically. Maybe think about a Polaroid camera. Now, why would some people get upset about saying that, Scott?
Well, I mean, I recall seeing this now, and I think that the top thread that I picked up on was victim blaming, right? Is that the one you're going for? It was like, you know, I can't, like, there is this whole problem of victim blaming in IT security, so we can acknowledge that. But I think in this particular scenario, there's a common sense factor that I think that we need. And, you know, like, I would be very scared of digitizing a photo like that.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, as soon as I take the photo of my phone, it's probably backed up to my Google account or my Apple account or something straight away. You know, it automatically leaves the device and it's automatically gone. And I just think that, you know, you've got to act.
But this is not to say the person taking the photo is at fault if it gets breached by someone else.
It's just, you know, you have to, everything that you do has a risk factor, right? And you have to do your own risk assessment and say, am I happy with this level of risk or not? If you're not, then fall back to Polaroid. If you are, then keep your, you know, keep your dick pics on your phone. But, you know, for me, my tolerance is a lot lower and I would never do that. But that's not to say that it would be my fault if I did, then they leaked. It's just...
And I think this is where we got to sort of separate the issues. So we've got to be clear, like, when we think about some of the really nasty stuff that happens with intimate photos, and particularly like ex-partners, things like this, it's really, really clear where the blame lies there. It's the perpetrator who's abused trust. And you know, they deserve to get every possible book thrown at them for that.
Totally.
But I guess I just didn't appreciate the feedback, which was very negatively directed at me for suggesting people think about how much risk they want to take. You know, this is not saying it's your fault if your dick pics, as you say, get leaked. It's like, you need to decide if you do this, because if you do this, your risk factor is going to increase.
And that just sounds like threat modeling to me, which we do all the time.
But maybe that's the difference, where we kind of live in a world where we're used to saying, look, there are all these different things we can do. We need to consider, you know, what's the likelihood, what's the impact, all this sort of stuff. And we think about that, and your average everyday people, particularly if and often this sort of comes back to other sides of sexual abuse or things like that. And I guess people there are coming from a very different angle, but I hope people don't interpret it as saying that it's the victim's fault and they shouldn't have taken it in the first place. It's like the victim is empowered, so that, you know, you get to decide how much you want to digitize, what you want to do with it, where you keep it, and do your own risk assessment.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so moving on. Actually, let's just touch on something else there. So there's this massive delete Facebook movement now. All right, as a result of the Cambridge Analytica stuff. I have noticed, being friends with you on Facebook, you have not deleted your Facebook.
No. Not yet.
Why not? I mean,
again, it maybe coming from this slightly, you know, coming from working in the security field, it wasn't a big surprise to me that this was happening. So my stance with any social media has always been, don't share something that I wouldn't want disseminating. And so for me, like, delete Facebook is never a thing, because I always knew that there were these huge privacy concerns, and people say, oh, don't put this on LinkedIn, or don't put that on Facebook. And I only put stuff that I would happy, even with privacy settings, for it to be ultimately public or available at least. So, you know, that didn't, the Facebook and Cambridge Analytica thing didn't identify anything new for me. It didn't add any new concerns to my existing threat model. So I wouldn't delete Facebook because nothing changed for me. But I can see how, you know, for many people, that wouldn't have been so clear that it was happening at this scale or with such ease. Apparently, you know, Stamos came out and said it's actually like considerably more people and may well be like most people on Facebook that are now impacted.
Right, so Alex Stamos, CISO, outgoing CISO of Facebook. And I think to your point, to me there's sort of two parts. So number one is it's kind of like, yes, we always knew this was a risk, and for perhaps for people like you and I, it was a calculated risk. The other thing is, and the fundamental reason why I won't delete Facebook is because I like seeing my friends. You know, like I like when, you know, when we're back on opposite ends of the world.
Well, you live really far away, so.
I know, but we have this connection, and it's lovely to see what you and your family get up to. I like sharing what I do with my family.
Jet ski photos, beaches.
You're mostly jet ski photos and beaches. It's basically like this, but just every day. So, you know, for me, that, I guess the practical value of having it and being conscious of the risk it poses in the first place means I never even gave a moment's thought to deleting Facebook. I get that there are certain companies that are wanting to send very sort of clear messages, I guess, around privacy, and there might have been a bit of pressure on some of them. I mean, we saw Elon Musk come out and delete.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it sounded like
SpaceX.
Sounded like he actually didn't know that
well,
he
yeah,
said
did,
Facebook
it did sound
pages.
Like that at first, right?
So, but yeah, we got Facebook? Okay, right.
No, we
kill
don't.
It. Easy now. Go on. So, yeah, but I almost feel, again, that this comes back to the pragmatism again. And, in fact, yesterday when I did a panel here at Loco Microsec, someone, in fact, it was the CEO of 1Password, asked a question that was very much around sort of the practicality of security and, you know, I guess we sort of got into what are real-world risks. And I just feel that very often we get this knee-jerk reaction where it's like, yeah, kill everything or it all has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And it's just people lose their minds. All right, so last thing, and you know, we actually need to sort of delve into something with a little bit of meat. We launched something new on Report Your RI. And for folks, yeah. I think many of you know, but Scott is the guy that created Report Your RI in the first place, did a wonderful job of it, and then I joined in, when was it, about October or something?
September, October.
So this is something that we do together now, and we're building out this service which allows the submission of CSP reports. Just recently, if the XSS auditor is fired in the browser, submit that. HPKP, which we tell everyone not to use now anyway. Tell us about the new thing that we've done with CSPs this week, though.
So the CSP Wizard came out this week. It was literally launched poolside here in Hawaii. So we took our laptops, we sat by the pool.
Had our thongs on.
I was wearing my flip-flops. And
and I also, I've just realized I can't actually read notes anymore.
Oh.
And I don't know if everyone can see that on the screen. So this is something that normally happens in Australia.
Let me just see if my Android device... Oh, it still works.
Ah, it still
there
works.
We go.
Can I have your Android device?
No, I'm not giving you my
on.
Phone.
Oh, man.
So yeah, CSP Wizard. We launched Poolside on Monday. It's been in development for quite a few months. It's something that I've wanted for a really long time. We've done a closed beta of this. And right now, one of the biggest problems, and people point this out rightly so, including Jim just the other day at Loco Moco actually, and Mario, that taking CSP and bolting it onto an existing application is really hard because you need to know all of your third-party dependencies like scripts, styles, images, where do we post form actions, XHRs, and it requires a really high level of knowledge about the application. So people would, you know, grep over their code base with script tags and try and find them all or do all kinds of crazy things. And I wanted to flip that around completely with the wizard, where we now, very high level, we deploy a policy in report only mode so it doesn't break anything, but it blocks everything. So we deploy a policy, report only, default source, none. And what that means is that every asset on the page is blocked. And then you deploy that onto your site and someone comes to your page. And they're like, okay, all these six images, we'll send a report for each one because they're all blocked. You've got these two script tags, we'll send a report. And the wizard sees one page load and all of the associated reports for that page. So we now know everything that you need to whitelist for that page. So you deploy this, maybe give it 7 days, and then we come to you and say, right, these are all of the locations in the last week that all of your visitors have loaded scripts from. And you can say, you know, these are the good ones, we recognize, we know, these are the bad ones, we won't add them. And very quickly, very easily, I've managed to twice now, I've cleared the cache, wiped everything and done this again on my site. I've rebuilt my exact CSP that I have now whilst, you know, out playing football or, you know, playing with the kids, and the wizard's just building this up in the background. Because, you know, the other thing is, when you get to really large sites, you could have different user accounts with different permissions, maybe different languages, geo-sensitive content. You know, the best source of information here is the browser and all of your users. So you say to all of your visitors, hey, you know, tell us exactly what you see on all pages of our site. And we can build an all-encompassing CSP from that with, you know, as close to no effort as we're going to get, right? It's never going to be no effort, because you have to make the call on whether something was good or bad. And I think we're getting to the point now where making a fully fledged CSP is now, I will say really easy. You know, because I genuinely think that we're getting there. And this was the goal of the service. You know, this is why I built it. This is why we have all of our tools. So I'm really happy with that. We saw a huge traffic spike the day after launch, because obviously it generates a lot of traffic.
So let's just like drill down that like another layer, because what we're saying is that normally in a well-configured CSP, you'd have a CSP out there. It would block things like script tags that weren't expected to be there, or an image embedded from another location. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you would report. So the report URI capability of a CSP will send a report to the service that we run, and it would say, here's what's blocked, and it'll give you some context. Whereas what you're saying here is for the wizard, you can roll out effectively an empty CSP in report-only mode. So it doesn't block anything, but it reports on everything that would be blocked if you weren't in report-only mode. So what you've done is, like, you've turned the browser into a beacon.
Yeah,
flip the and effectively on every page load on your site, that the user sees everything that's just fine, like no drones whatsoever.
Yep.
But you look at the dev tools and it's like report, 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 report. Now, some people ask, what does this do to performance or UX?
So the good thing with the performance side is, I mean, you can see this in DevTools in Chrome. If you simulate like low network bandwidth, they're sent asynchronously, so they don't block. You know, if a script tag or a style gets blocked and a CSP report goes, it's not going to like stop loading the style tag, right? It will keep loading assets. So fully async, no impact there. And they're sent with like a lower priority as well, where if, you know, if cool the iPad down. if you look in the network tab, like sometimes the CSP reports will actually not be sent. If there's some kind of contention, or, you know, maybe low bandwidth, terrible Wi-Fi at a hotel or something. I've seen many occasions here, because I'm running the wizard on my site right now, where the reports actually just get abandoned, you know, so that they are sacrificed at the, you know, at the first sign of any kind of issue.
So I think the important thing is there that there's no impact on the UX. There are extra requests that are being made, but they're tiny post requests with a little JSON payload that are gzipped as well, aren't they?
If the browser if the browser will gzip and send them over, and our response bodies to them are all empty, so it's literally like a couple hundred bytes response. It's as tiny as we can possibly make it.
And
for that reason,
I think one of the things that's super cool about this is that we know that there are some idiosyncrasies between browser versions and indeed browser makes in terms of the way they report CSPs. So what I like about this is that rather than us saying, based on the spec of CSP and based on the content we have on our site, these are the things we think we need to do, it's like, let's just let the browsers do their native thing and send everything, aggregate them, and then go through and look at them. And you know, you don't need to necessarily do this for very long, depending on the amount of traffic you have to your site and how long it's going to take everyone to visit it to sort of crawl through the various locations.
And that's the thing, like, the browser... The superset of all browsers that visit your site are omniscient. They will see and exercise every code path, every page, language option. You know, they will, if you leave that on there for like a week or so, you're going to exercise everything.
Yeah.
And that's what people struggle with in, you know, reversing that from code or something.
So I did this on Have I Been Pwned yesterday, and I already have a CSP on Have I Been Pwned. So I kept the existing CSP, added a report only CSP, so we can have multiple CSPs that are on the same page, and I ran it for about 10 minutes, I'd say, but I've got at the moment a couple of 100,000 people a day coming to the site, so there's enough sort of volume that 10 minutes, and it's not a complex site either, right?
Yeah,
like you
five, 6 pages?
Exactly, you execute or sort of explore all code paths very quickly. So I ran it, and then I had a big list, of stuff that I could either allow or what's the terminology? Allow or block. Yeah, allow or block. And it would be stuff like for your script source, you need to add cdnjs.cloudflare. You know, so because I'm getting JavaScript libraries from Cloudflare CDN. I also saw stuff there that shouldn't be there. And in fact, you were sitting next to me when I saw this one host name. I was like, that's a bit weird. Posted into the browser and Freedome VPN immediately said suspicious site. So, like, what's happening there? Why am I getting suspicious sites embedding stuff into my site?
So, oh man, this is one of the problems, is that the endpoints aren't always...
clean.
Yeah, clean's a good word. We'll stick with clean. Endpoints are not always clean. So, one of the big things, and we're actually tracking this, I'm going to be talking about this a bit more publicly soon, is if the user has an extension installed, that extension is essentially all powerful on the page. So, you know, you load the page and the extension's like, hey, we're going to insert like all of these Google ads into the page, and all of a sudden Have I Been Pwned has got Google ads running on the side. Except they're not clever enough to rip out the CSP yet as well. So they put, you know, malicious JavaScript advert whatever in, and the CSP says, hey, no, you know, Troy's not whitelisted this, so we're going to send a report and tell you crazyrussiandomain.com is blocked from loading script in your site. So, you know, some people argue that's a false positive in CSP, and I think in a way, you know, I can kind of see and agree with that, but it's also a really good detection mechanism, because like you would now know, or certainly with us at the service level with our bird's eye view of this, that these bad things are happening en masse.
And I think that's maybe part of the key as well, like because we can aggregate enough requests. And just for context, I tweeted a stat only a couple of hours ago. So we're seeing 1.2 billion requests in the last week, just a tad under 1.2 billion requests. And every one of these requests is a CSP being generated. Now, some of them, a bunch of them, may be from the wizard, which is like legitimate stuff that shouldn't be blocked. But we know that even before the wizard, we had people pushing out policies. Sometimes they're a bit malformed and there's false positives in there, but very often we're seeing just huge numbers of malicious stuff blocked because it's in people's browsers and it's being embedded in sites.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's some sort of cool stuff as we start looking more about the sort of the aggregate of everything that's being collected as well. Now your phone works, right?
Yeah, of course.
Go to my website for a second, because I'm double checking the sponsor before I read them out. So I didn't actually read out what was on the screen here, but you may have seen me tweet this from Australia before. Temperature iPad needs to cool down before you can use it. Is it the guys I thought it was?
Is it Turbium?
Yeah, I thought it was Turbium.
There we go.
Because I updated the URL a couple of days ago. I have been quasi in holiday mode in my defense, but Turbium has been sponsoring my blog again. They've got a match light product that does a bunch of infosec-y things, and they've been a sponsor many, many times over. And I'm telling you, you should go to a sponsorship model too, because the sponsorship works really, really nicely.
Yeah, I would like to actually. And you seem to be having success. You're all booked out now for...
Oh yeah, 2018's all gone, which probably says I'm not very good at pricing it. So, but, you know, maybe I'll get better at that for 2019, I don't know. But hey, look, I hope this was an interesting one. It's the first time I've ever done a weekly update with someone else, but it's like an epic little spot here. Before I turn the camera off, I'll turn it around and then you can see our romantic spot by the church. I know, it sounds weird, but it's a nice place.
Our beautiful chapel.
This is a happy little chapel. And next, I don't know where I'll come from next week, because I'm going to go to Maui in a couple of days. You're going to go home tomorrow, so you're...
Rain and cold.
Rain and cold for Scott back in England. Anyway, thanks very much for watching, and I'll come from somewhere next week.
See you later.